Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas. Loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I'm an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, not cracking up nearly as much as I'd hoped at that introduction, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
We're actors. We're the opposite of people.
Since you actually are an actor.
Yes, I am.
I don't know if you could speak to the veracity of that.
Yeah. No, that's accurate. The things that people do in private to keep away from private eyes, we do in public. Okay. On a stage for all to see.
Okay, then.
That's paraphrasing.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because what we're talking about today is people who are, I hate to use this phrase because it's been overused, internet famous.
They are celebrities.
You really like that, don't you?
I love it because I am one.
Okay.
From a very tiny, tiny way of, you have to generously give me the benefit of the doubt to call me a celebrity.
Well, some of us are less comfortable with that, but other people have used the internet to go out and try to make a name for themselves and possibly become internet famous or actually even real-time, you know, real-world famous out on the big screen and the little screen and on the radio and all else. And we decided that it'd be kind of interesting to talk about that because, you know, I know that none of our audience is surprised to know this. We're in this generation of people that is very comfortable with the internet. And I mean that for all age ranges now. My 86-year-old dad is comfortable with the internet, so, you know. Yep. But yeah, we're all pretty familiar with this. It's not hard to make a name for yourself for good or ill on venues like Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Flickr, and all the other similar sites.
Right.
And, you know, so the thing is, there are a lot of people out there. How do you go about doing it? And we picked some people that we thought it would be kind of interesting to look into. and talk about how they manage to make themselves into minor and in a lot of cases, major celebrities.
Yeah, because when you look at the traditional routes to getting success, especially in the arts, anything as a musician, as an actor, as a writer,
yeah,
you know, going the old media route, there's a pretty high barrier to entry.
Well, there are a whole lot of talented people out there.
Yeah,
it's obvious in just checking in with some of these sites that I mentioned a few minutes ago. There are a lot of talented people out there who may or may not be signed to a major recording or writing contract.
Yeah.
And, you know, these tools give us an opportunity to check in with some of them and see
what
they're
capable
about
doing. Yeah, there are tons of people. Well, let's put it this way. If you were only able to consume content by listening to the radio, by watching television, by going to movies, that mm-hmm. kind of thing, you would see a certain range of artists and of various disciplines.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. You would see a certain range of music video directors. You'd see a certain range of musicians and singers and bands, that sort of thing, actors, writers, that kind of thing. But there'd be a large number of people you would never see because they just didn't have whatever it was, like whether it was luck or the right opportunity. They didn't know the right person. They have the talent, but not the venue to reach an audience. Well, the web really helped take care of that problem. The web kind of created an equal ground for people to reach an audience. You didn't have to sign a contract with a major label in order to get your content on the web.
Yep.
So you didn't have to answer to anyone else. You didn't have to meet that person's expectations. Because what happens if, you know, I'm a movie studio executive and
you are?
Chris, we're going to do a hypothetical here.
Oh,
hypothetically,
you're such a good actor.
I know.
I was so momentarily confused.
Rah, bah, bah. I don't want to green light it. There you go. That's my movie studio executive. Rah, bah, bah. And, but let's say I'm a movie studio executive and Chris comes and he pitches an idea to me for a movie or a television show.
Mm-hmm.
And, in which case,
yeah, JB, look at this.
Here's your problem. You're pitching a TV show to a movie executive. But no, let's say you're pitching your idea to me and I'm either having a bad day or I just don't get the concept. I don't see how it could be successful.
Yes.
And it's not that the concept is bad. It's just that I'm a human being. I have my own set of biases and preferences. And so I say no to that. And then Chris walks off a broken and humiliated man. So typical Thursday. And anyway, we then get to a point where, you know, Chris has been demoralized. He has less impetus to go out and try and push for it again. And if you get a series of rejections, which, by the way, if you're an actor or artist, life is a series of rejections.
Yeah.
You know, it can really take the wind out of your sails. But then let's say that Chris decides, hey, you know what? This thing I have would work as a web video series. So what I'm going to do is, for less money than it would take to do a television show or a movie, I'm going to get together the best possible people I can for the budget I have, which, granted, is still not going to be insignificant for many of these projects.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in a lot of cases, it's a big risk, and you are pouring a lot of money into it. It's just, it's a lot of money on a different scale, right?
Yeah.
It might be a few thousand dollars, which is still a lot of money for most of us,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to several million dollars for television or $100 million for a movie. Or, you know, and albums also. I mean, record companies, same sort of thing.
Yeah.
But go about the web, and then, you know, as long as you register a space or you use something like YouTube to upload your content to, you've got the platform there. You don't have to jump through any hoops with the television companies or the movie studios. It's still a challenging road, but it has a much lower level of entry than the traditional media.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So let's actually use some examples and talk about some people who use the internet to kind of launch their careers.
Okay. Now, I wanted to point out, too, that in some ways this is scary to the major entertainment properties because...
Oh, definitely.
Well, it's sort of a good and a bad thing, though, because
yeah.
On the bad side, since I started off with that, you know, you go, well, great. You know, how am I supposed to? A lot of the executives I've seen quoted say, well, you know, our company is a way of weeding out the people who are, you know, the most talented and putting them in the spotlight. And that those who are of lesser talent, we reject. And that means that anything that we do has, you know, we've already vetted this for the consumer.
Right.
Well, then there's some, there is some truth in that, I would say. Because I've, you know, everybody knows somebody who is, you know, that thing like, oh, look, I wrote a book, or, you know, check out my band. And you go, yeah, that's great, man.
Or
that's
check
awesome.
Out my public access television show.
Exactly. But then every once in a while, you run into somebody, you go, wow, you're really good.
Yeah, how the heck did you not get famous already?
And that is why the big media properties have tuned in and are starting to find people. And that's what brings us to our podcast today, is some of the people we're going to talk about are people who went, you know, the major executives have gone, Mr. Johnson, we need to sign this kid up.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some of them.
Okay. Let's talk. I wanted to talk a bit about, let's talk about a guy who really is kind of the definitive internet celebrity as far as geek music goes.
Okay.
So we're talking about a certain Jonathan Coulton.
Ah, yes.
Now, the code monkey.
Yeah, the code monkey. Now, I have to admit that my first interaction, where I haven't had an interaction, my first knowledge of Mr. Coulton came from a certain person that we met one day, a friend of the Stuff You Should Know gang, Mr. Hodgman.
Ah, yes.
John Hodgman and Jonathan Coulton are friends.
Yes.
And the first time I encountered him was when Mr. Coulton was playing backup on the Hobos song.
Right.
Would you call it a song?
There's music to it.
There is music to it. And he managed to play it all the way through. It's like 15 minutes long.
Yeah.
Without making a mistake. And I don't know that I've ever played that long without a mistake. Certainly not guitar.
I don't think I've seen Jonathan Coulton play 15 minutes without a mistake since then.
but you go back and I said, who is this Jonathan Coulton guy? And then I checked out his catalog and wow.
Yeah. So what Jonathan Coulton did was he was working as a coder, a programmer at one point, and then decided he made a big decision. He decided he was going to really make a go of it to be a professional musician. And it was a scary thing. I mean, he's a family man.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just some single guy. He's a family man. But it was a scary notion to leave what you know behind, to leave a steady job behind.
Yes.
And to try and make it as a musician.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Chris is nodding at me knowingly. As a fellow musician, he can attest to this personally. As an actor, I can tell you that I never had the guts to try and make it as an actor, as my primary occupation. In Atlanta, it's particularly difficult, but no matter what market you're in, it's tough.
It gets a little easier once you have a following, but you have to have a pretty big following before it gets to be the comfort level gets to be okay.
What?
I mean, even Scott Adams of Dilbert.
Yeah.
Not that he doesn't fall into this category, but he was drawing Dilbert and got syndicated before he ever left his day job.
Right.
If I remember correctly. So that's, you know, and I think of him as a famous cartoonist now, but
sure.
At the time he created some security for himself before he jumped ship. And that's not what Jonathan Coulton did.
No. So what Coulton decided to do was he created a blog.
Yes.
And he began to he did this pub this project called Thing a Week.
Yes.
The idea,
I like Thing a Week.
Thing a Week was, I mean, it was a very ambitious project. The the idea of the project was that he would write, produce, and record a song each week for a year.
Mm-hmm.
So for a full year, he would produce a song, and then he would put it up on the blog and allow people to listen to it for free.
Yes.
And this produced several songs that have since become some of the standards that he plays at his concerts. Coulton's been playing for quite some time now, and he's released a lot of his music on the internet, a lot of it under a license that allows you to download the music for free, and you can even use it as long as you're not using it in a way to make money yourself.
Yes, promoting your own product.
Yeah, you can use it, like you can remix it, you can set it to videos, that sort of thing, for a lot of his music. But he also was offering music for sale on his site. And he even gave people the option. He said, if you want to steal my music, go ahead and steal my music. I'm giving you the opportunity to download it for free if you want to. Mm-hmm. If you think my music's worth paying for, then please purchase my music. And people began to buy his music. They wanted him to keep making music. And that was the thing. They knew that if they did not pay him, if they did not buy his music, then he would have no recourse but to not do this anymore.
Right, right. Well, he, you know, at least not in the way that he's doing it now.
Right.
Because basically, it sort of reminds me of the old style models where artists had a patron.
Right.
Like the old composers centuries ago who would have a king who would commission works from them on a regular basis.
Painters as well. Michelangelo, yes. Leonardo da Vinci. These mm-hmm. are guys who had patrons who would give them room and board and pay them a salary to create art.
Yeah. And now artists like Jonathan Coulton can say, hey, you know, if it's worth $5 to you, send me a $5. And
yeah.
I will, you know, I won't take a day job again, and I will continue to write music more frequently.
So,
and I can share this with more people. So, you know, it pays the web bill.
Right. And Coulton still does the music thing. He still does tours. He plays tours quite a bit. And I've seen him play probably 5 or 6 times.
Yeah.
And
you are his patron.
I am his patron. I sat front row center for the last show that I saw him in, and got to exchange in witty stage banter, which is also known as heckling. But I wasn't really heckling. It was more of a goofy little conversation. I think next time I'll be quiet because I'm not nearly as funny as I think I am. Anyway, Jonathan Coulton's seen quite a bit of success, and he's remained an independent artist and still does release music on his blog. And you can still purchase things. Now, not all the songs are available for free anymore, but many of them still are. And you can still purchase his music directly from him. And, it's interesting. In case you were wondering, he also is the guy who wrote the song at the end of the Portal game.
Yes, Still Alive.
And he also wrote the song that will be at the end of Portal 2.
Yes.
So he
still
actually...
Still Alive too?
He spilled the beans on that.
Yeah.
On Twitter, and then realized that maybe he shouldn't have. But anyway, but now the word is out. Not that that's a bad thing. It just drove up excitement because everyone loved that song so much.
Yeah, yeah.
So Jonathan Coulton really managed to leverage the web in a big way. And he values the interaction with his fan base. You know, he doesn't ignore them. He doesn't just set his stuff up on the web and then say, here you go, and then walks away.
Right.
He maintains a nice, healthy relationship with his fan base. And so that's really helped cultivate very loyal fans who will go to as many shows as they possibly can and buy all his music. So he really nailed it when it comes to using the internet as a platform to market yourself and to get your work out there for people to enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't hurt that he's a bona fide geek who really does love science and technology and the sort of stuff that people who are really devoted to the internet, the same kind of things they're interested in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep. So who else do you want to talk about?
I was going to talk about Rooster Teeth Productions.
Yes. We've actually sort of talked about them before.
Yes, we have. Rooster Teeth is the production company that produced the web series Red vs. Blue,
mm-hmm.
which, of course, is the Machinima series. It uses the Halo game engine as digital puppets for the scripts that they wrote, which when that first started off, Red vs. Blue was really just kind of a vehicle for jokes about how boring it is to be in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And how sometimes decisions in the military seem to defy all common sense.
Right.
So it's kind of a surreal satire in a way, sort of on the level of Catch-22, but with more curse words and more surreal humor. But Rooster Teeth created this model where these guys who had worked in commercials and worked on another website that was called Drunk Gamers back in the day, they used to do sketches and things like that. They got together and they started doing this series. And the model that Rooster Teeth used was to upload videos to their website, and then they invited people to become sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
So you could become a sponsor for, I think it was $20 when it started off. And for $20, you would get access to special videos they would make that they would only make available to sponsors. Mm-hmm. You'd also get to see the videos early. So I think like 2 days before everyone else could see them, you could watch the episode. And at the end of the first season, all the sponsors got a DVD of all the episodes that were produced during that first season of Red vs. Blue.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was how they initially began to fund Red vs. Blue. Since then, they still, Rooster Teeth gets revenue from a variety of sources. They produce commercials for video game companies. They also sell advertising on the videos that they have. So you might watch a pre-roll ad before a Rooster Teeth video.
Mm-hmm.
They also have advertising on their website. And, you know, they sell merchandise and they sell DVDs of the shows that they've done. Plus, they still have the subscription base. So if you pay that subscription price, you do still get exclusive content and you get to see stuff early.
Mm-hmm.
So that model really worked for them. They've been around for, I think, 8 years now, maybe close to 9.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty impressive that they've managed to make that work. So again, this is a company that, you know, they had some fun ideas, but they would probably never have made a break into either the independent film circuit or the television circuit based upon what they were doing. I mean, it would be really hard to get a foot in on those doors. Instead, they went with using the web as their delivery system. And since then, now they have shown their stuff at independent film festivals.
Mm-hmm.
They've shown an entire season as a movie. And so that, again, is a good internet success story. And also, like Jonathan Colton, they have a community of users. They have a message board where people can comment. They can comment on the various videos. And they also have interaction with their fans. Like, they even will go on Xbox Live and play games with their fans.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they invented a type of gameplay for Halo called Griffball.
Really?
And it's named after one of the characters from Red vs. Blue.
Yeah.
Yeah, whoever is the person with the Griff ball in the game turns the color that Griff is in Red vs. Blue, which is kind of a yellowish orange.
Mm-hmm.
Supposed to be orange. I maintain that it still looks yellow. But anyway, so Rooster Teeth Productions has seen a lot of success that way, and it's really impressive to kind of see where they came from and how a group of guys who had this kind of silly idea managed to turn it into a viable entertainment business.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, we were talking about some of these folks. I started thinking about people that I saw getting picked up after working on online. Now, one of the first people that came to mind was Amanda Congdon, formerly of Rocket Boom.
Mm-hmm.
She and a partner had started Rocket Boom, which was a little daily, would you call it a newscast kind of thing that was shown on the web?
Kind of.
It was newsy-ish. And they actually had a big, pretty well public falling out. She and her business partner disagreed on how things should be run. So she left, started a blog, and then eventually got picked up by ABC News as an anchor, and now has left and is doing other projects. But that's kind of interesting to imagine that is, you know, really you can start your own show and just get picked up. I mean, I think that's also what you could say about people like The Lonely Island.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not familiar, they are a comedy group who have been making videos since 2000, according to their website, thelonelyisland.com. You may, if you watch American television, you may recognize at least one of them, Andy Samberg, Akiva Schaffer, and I really hope I'm not mispronouncing Jorma Taccone's or Taccone's name.
Mm-hmm.
Someone write in and tell me that I mispronounced it. I mispronounced it at least once.
Right.
They are very, very funny people and have been on Saturday Night Live as a result of getting picked up. And probably more importantly, Andy Samberg has been on Yo Gabba Gabba.
Of course, that's important.
That is important. But yeah, I mean, people, you know, you start creating things, you know, your comedy or your music or your writing. And I mean, there have been many bloggers who have gotten book deals.
Sure.
Based on their blogs, which I find impressive. But yeah, I mean, if it helps to have to be able to cultivate a good audience for your work and create a little buzz around it. Like, and I also thought of Lonely Girl 15.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes, I remember that.
Which there was I hadn't actually watched the video, but I became acquainted with the show, which aired on YouTube. from Wired magazine. And they did a show after the after it had been revealed that this person,
a scripted thing.
That basically the Jessica Rose, as a young actress, had been basically portraying herself as somebody who really just needed to get out there. She had a family that sort of encouraged her to keep to herself, if I'm not mistaken. It's mm-hmm. kind of the thing. And she really wanted to get out there and be a little bit more open to the public. And people were captivated by this story. I said, wow, really? I mean, she seems so nice. I want to be your friend.
Which was presented at first as a legitimate, sincere kind of... Like it was real. It
like
was
a video blog.
Video blog.
Yeah. And as it turns out, no, it was a scripted event. She was an actress playing the part of this young woman who was bearing her thoughts for the world to see.
And we should maintain that that does not in any way make the video necessarily less enjoyable to watch.
No. But the story captivated so many people's attention. I think it's sort of one of those things that you go, well, I mean, you can really, just because you make a video yourself and upload it to one of the video sharing sites on the web doesn't mean that people aren't watching it. And if you do a good job with it, you know, you could capture a lot of people's interest and attention.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen that go both ways, right? Of course, we've talked about the memes in the memes episode. Some videos turn into memes. They don't necessarily allow the person in the video to leverage it in any useful way.
Yeah, I think it's good that you make that distinction because people like the Tron guy.
Yeah.
That's not really what we're talking about.
Yeah. We're talking about people who are trying to make a creative endeavor, not necessarily just shoot something funny or extemporaneous, but it's the idea of leveraging the web to get content that you normally would have seen in these more traditional media form factors. It's just that there's, you know, like I said, you can't necessarily break into those easily.
Yeah, and we're not talking about David after the dentist.
Right. No, we're talking more about the scripted stuff.
Purposefully trying to do this in an artistic way to gather attention.
So we've talked a bit about music. We've talked about video and movies.
Mm-hmm.
We should also mention that, you know, print is another way. Another thing that can be difficult to break into, particularly
Definitely.
For things like, let's say that you're a comic strip artist.
Mm-hmm.
Web comics are a big thing, and there are lots of different artists who have tried using the web to produce or to publish material, self-published material in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
And the list for this is really long. I mean, there are tons of different artists who have done this, and some of them have done art in more traditional form factors as well, like Phil Folio.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Phil Folio, who's a comic book artist, an artist in general, who has produced art for lots of different venues, including he did the illustrations for all the some American editions of the Myth Adventures books, and also did the comic book series for Myth Adventures, which was written by Robert Asprin. And
They also a number of games.
Yep.
He and his wife have both collaborated on things like that, and the Girl Genius comic.
Yes, Girl Genius is the one I was specifically thinking about because he's published it online.
Yep, I actually used to buy it in print form.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I have been reading it online, and it's funny because when you said that, it reminded me of Scott McCloud,
yes.
who did the Understanding comics series.
Yes,
has written some really awesome books about what you could do with it, with comics as an art form. And he talks about the limitations of the standard strip. And I think on the web, you can do so well. He would argue this too, I'm pretty sure, and has, that you can do so much more if you can open up the space and show art in different ways. You can tell a different kind of story.
Yeah, and some artists have tried to embrace that. Some artists have been very resistant toward it, thinking that it's hard. It's another tool to tell a story, and I think some artists are more comfortable using that tool than others.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you've probably heard about the comic books. Maybe you actually read them. Maybe you read comic books online or using an iPad
yep.
feature.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of those comics have added features in them so that there's a little bit of action in there as well. It's not just static images. You get a few little effects that you can add in that you wouldn't be able to do on the page, obviously. Mm-hmm. Same sort of thing with webcomics. The idea is that you could add more elements into your storytelling or even choose to tell a story in a totally different way that you wouldn't be able to tell if it were confined to a page.
Yes.
Like I said, some artists do not agree with that particular approach. They think that human customers are pretty much kind of conditioned to reading comics in a very static way.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's very hard to get people to break out of that. So it's an interesting debate that still goes on in the webcomic space.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to mention a couple of other webcomic artists. Scott Kurtz, who does PvP Online.
Yes.
He,
I love PvP.
PvP, yeah.
Also, that jumped off the screen and onto the page.
Yes.
Released print versions of a lot of his comics after they were online.
Right, yeah. He managed to... he started off publishing his strip to the web. And he was getting most of his money from ad revenue. And then he began to collect strips in books and sell them, just like you would find other traditional comic strips. You know, like you go to the bookstore and you look in the humor section and you're going to find all the, you know, the Garfield books and the, you know, I haven't read comic strips in so long. I'm not even going to do this because I'll date myself. But at any rate, same sort of thing. You could find, you know, PvP books online. I'm sure in some bookstores as well you could purchase them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also have Tycho and Gabe of Penny Arcade,
mm-hmm.
who
True.
Are the very successful webcomic creators. And again, just like the other examples we've said, both Scott Kurtz and Tycho and Gabe in particular have been very good at cultivating that audience and creating a community for them, not just a website where you read a comic strip, but a place where people actually interact. And they've also experimented with other forms of media. So they're not just drawing comics, but they might do a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And the podcast could be about different challenges that webcomic artists face and their own perspectives on some of these debates that are within webcomics themselves. And it's pretty interesting to hear from their perspectives because, of course, these are the guys who are producing the art.
Yep. Yep. Or video games.
Or video games. Yes. Tycho and Gabe have made there's a Penny Arcade video game.
Yes.
I think you could get it off Xbox Live, if I'm not mistaken.
I had another
example, something that was interesting to me, another example of a person who has a history in old media,
mm-hmm.
who created something in new media.
Okay.
Joss Whedon.
Yes.
So Joss Whedon is the creator of such shows as Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Angel, Firefly, also did Dollhouse. He's known for writing some, you know, kind of quirky dialogue, creating very strong female characters and having sort of a geek perspective on culture. Mm-hmm. All his characters tend to be really pop culture savvy and they very much tend to be geeks. There's a spectrum there, right?
Yes.
So, he created a show called Dr. Horrible.
Yes.
Which is a 3-episode story.
Yes, they created this on a very modest budget, too.
Right, and
was this really impressive.
I think the impetus for this was the writer's strike,
it was
wasn't it?
The writer's strike,
right.
Indeed.
So the writer's strike in Hollywood meant that no new content for television was going to be created during this time because the Writers Guild had decided to strike.
As it turns out, the networks are really good at funding a lot of these shows.
Right.
So when the writers are doing it themselves, you know, but you know what? I watch it, and I don't think at all that it looks like a low-budget show.
No, the budget for Dr. Horrible was probably much higher than for your average web series.
Well, that's true. And the people who are making it know how to make inexpensive stuff look really good.
And it also helps when Joss Whedon has a big enough name that he's able to attract high-level talent to be in his production.
Oh, really? Like who?
Like Neil Patrick Harris.
Oh, yeah, him.
So, yeah, your average web series doesn't have Doogie Howser as the lead. Neil Patrick Harris was, of course, the lead in Dr. Horrible. He was the title character, mm-hmm. Dr. Horrible. Felicia Day, who had been in episodes of Buffy the Vampire Slayer in a Sears commercial, and also had her own web series called The Guild. She was, of course, cast as the potential love interest for Dr. Horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And so Joss Whedon used this story to tell the tale of a supervillain from the supervillain's perspective about why he does the things he does, how he's human just like everybody else, how he's affected by his own emotions, and what finally propels him to celebrity status within the supervillain community. And it's an entertaining and, of course, heartbreaking story because Joss Whedon can't make anyone have a happy ending. And that's another podcast, probably not for Tech Stuff. But anyway, he used the web to launch this series. And he has, of course, Whedon already had a very strong fan community.
Yes.
From his television series. Mm-hmm. And also his work in movies.
Yep.
And so he had a built-in audience, right?
Yes, he did. I also want to give a shout-out to one of my and my wife's favorite characters, whom you didn't mention. So, Nathan Fillion, if you are listening, it was me who mentioned you.
Captain Hammer.
Captain Hammer.
Nathan Fillion, I love you too, but you know that because I've tweeted to you.
Yeah, I was going to say, he probably already knows you. So.
At any rate, he doesn't know me. If Nathan Fillion knows me, he's doing an awfully good job at keeping that information private. Anyway,
he's just going to use it against you later. He's famous for his pranks.
He could be. You know, he said that he would be willing to be Mal again if Firefly were to be relaunched. Hey, that works in two different ways. Relaunched. Anyway, so this was an example of someone who had worked in old media going toward new media, and it was a huge success as far as web video series are concerned, right?
Yeah. I mean, you might look at that versus the numbers. You know, strictly from the numbers perspective versus an average TV show on an average night, you might go, whatever. But, you know, for the web, actually, with as much content as there is on the web and many choices you have to choose from, the show did very well.
Yes. And it's available on DVD now. So you could actually purchase it.
And I think I just wanted to add that I think it shows the viability of that as a way to
a vehicle, yeah,
a vehicle to do this. The same kind of thing with the Battlestar Galactica mini videos that they did in between seasons.
Yes.
Shows you that you can use that to either bolster your property or use it as a different angle from which to look at it.
Now, of course, not every web series that comes out is going to have the production value of Dr. Horrible because I mean, like we said, it was much less money than it would take to make a typical television show, but much more money than the typical web video person has at his or her disposal.
Yeah.
So, you know, but it does show that the web is a viable platform to get your material to an audience.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like I said, there's DVD sales now. There was a big contest for people to create videos to become the next member of the Evil League of Evil. By the way,
how did you know that?
Trivia. Jonathan Strickland has a video of him as a character called the Philosophizer. If you want to do a search on YouTube for Vroom Hilda, that's Vroom with a V, Vroom Hilda and the Philosophizer, you will see the audition video for the Evil League of Evil. We were mentioned in the credits. We did not make one of the final five. I don't know why. We were really, really evil.
They were really good. I enjoyed it.
No, we weren't good. We were evil.
The performance was really good.
Oh, thank you. So anyway, that was another example of fan interaction, and it really helped with the DVD sales as well. And we've seen, you know, other material inspired by Dr. Horrible. There are sing-along performances of Dr. Horrible that will happen.
Yep.
Kind of like the old Rocky Horror Picture Show stuff. And there's that great video that was produced as if Dr. Horrible were an 8-bit NES game.
Yes, I love that.
Like an old NES RPG game. And we mentioned The Guild briefly. That's Felicia Day's series, which is about a group of gamers who are playing a game very similar to World of Warcraft and kind of the complications that arise in their lives.
Yeah, and it had the very first part of it, they actually meet each other in the flesh instead of in the pixel.
Yeah,
and
for the first time.
And it's a very, very awkward. That was painful for me to watch.
Well, yeah, because you realize
it was a very good job, which is why.
Exactly.
I'm saying,
you realize
it's painful for
it's showing off gamers as being socially awkward.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, I'm socially awkward, so I have a try.
Exactly. Yeah. So they're very good at interacting online, but once you get them in person, they have problems. And what I think is amusing, this is kind of a spoiler alert, but in later seasons of The Guild, you get a delicious villain played by a Mr. Will Wheaton. Which just shows that, you know, if your web series gets enough traction, you might actually find people who have had work in old media get interested and get involved. And, you know, these are just some examples. There are thousands of examples on the web. Now, granted, for the thousands of examples on the web of success, there are millions of examples of things that never went anywhere.
Yes.
So there's still an element of luck. There's still definitely an element of quality. If what you are producing is not of very good quality, if you do get famous, it's going to be for the wrong reason.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So you still have to create good quality stuff, but the web gives you that that access that you might not otherwise have, especially if you're like, let's say that you're somewhere where you're far away from Hollywood or New York or any of the other centers where we think of the entertainment industry being located. You can produce this theoretically anywhere.
Yep. That's
so
true.
The web has really helped out with that. Now, if you guys have a great idea for a web series, like a comic or a video or a song, then definitely pursue that. Think about using the web as a platform. Look into people who have done it before and seen how they've achieved success, and learn as much as you can before you just, you know, try and strike out there and throw something up on the internet. And, you know, always work at it, because chances are your first attempt may not go over well.
But who knows? You could end up being the next Justin Bieber.
Yeah, you could. Gosh, the Beeb.
Who got discovered from YouTube.
By the way, I just want to point this out.
It's unbelievable.
I heard it from 50 Cent himself. Never make fun of Justin Bieber fans, because they will not accept your apology.
No. But no, jokes aside, and whether or not you like his music, he got picked up from YouTube. Somebody saw him on YouTube, and now he's a very big star.
Yeah, so that's as big as he can get.
It can be done.
Yes. So, guys, you know, I encourage creativity. I love seeing good creative work out there.
And if nothing else, it's fun.
Yeah.
Go do it.
Yeah, just, you know, like I said, keep in mind that that failure could still be part of the equation, but it's better to go ahead and try something and fail than to not even put forth the effort.
You can always look at it before you post it.
Yes. And like I said, and again, do your research. Yeah. Find out what works and what doesn't work. Don't just go into it blind. And guys, that'll wrap up this story. If you have a particular web series or a comic or web artist who uses the web to publish his or her work, let us know. Let us know on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle there is TechStuffHSW. Or shoot us an email. That address is TechStuff@HowStuffWorks.com. And Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring, and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.